Hello, hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Show. I'm your host, Nicholas Larimer, and apologies today for any sort of sound issues or stuff like that. We were trying to get that all sorted out before the show, but time was passing, the weather is hot and unpleasant, and I am quite frankly exhausted because the water outage that has been affecting a lot of Joburg has only just been resolved as of about an hour ago for me, so I am also rather, shall we say, unsanitary right now. But anyway, today I'm joined by Mr. Marius Root. Marius, how are you doing?
How's it, Nick? How's it going?
It's been better. And also Mr. Michael Morris. Michael, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you. I gather a deal better than you are. I hate even to mention the fact that it's been raining a little bit, been pleasantly cool in the Cape. So I'm very sorry to hear about your difficulties, which I know have nothing to do with the weather, really.
Yeah, no, indeed. So just to recap, because I know this is self-indulgent.
Sorry, Nick, can I interrupt?
You go ahead.
I think it's remiss if we don't mention to everybody watching that it's Michael's birthday today.
Oh, yes,
if indeed. Everyone wants to wish him a happy birthday.
Yeah. Yes, happy birthday, Michael.
Thank you very much. Older, but I don't think necessarily wiser. Certainly yesterday. But thank you. Thank you very much.
All right, so to recap what has been going on in Joburg is that at the beginning of the week, a water pumping station power supply failed, and it took, I think it was about 24 hours around about, maybe a little bit less, to fix that electricity problem, during which the entire sort of western side of Johannesburg, everywhere from the south of Johannesburg up to Soweto, and then into Roodepoort and Randburg, lost water. And in some areas, including the place I live, the water has not returned until about 12 o'clock 5 days later. And this is not even close to the first major water outage we've had in Johannesburg. There have been areas much worse affected. I believe there was one suburb in Johannesburg that had water, was without water for over a month. This is becoming very clearly an endemic problem. And where is the Johannesburg mayor in all of this? Well, Mayor Kabelo Komanda was asked on ENCA what he thinks about the grumblings about the potential for a rates boycott due to residents not getting very basic services like water, which is, of course, a constitutional right. His response was that a rates boycott is a political strategy and politically motivated to undermine Black leadership. Well, quite frankly, and I don't really know how else to say this, Mayor, but having just experienced 5 days without any water, you can go and get bent. The problem is not Black leadership or whatever you're going to create as the phantom here. The problem is we didn't have freaking water because the city's infrastructure has not been maintained properly, and it is causing chaos and destruction of South Africa's most important city. Morris, what do you make of the mayor's comments?
It's complete rubbish, obviously. But I saw there was a tweet, I think her name is Heidi Giyokos. She's an ENCA journalist, I think. And she put up the tweet with the mayor's comments. And I was looking at the comments under the tweet. And it seemed that everybody, no matter what race they were saying that the mayor can, as you said, get bent. And somebody was saying the mayor... and it was a Black person saying the mayor mustn't bring Black leadership into this. It's got nothing to do with race and so on. So I think people are seeing through this kind of rubbish. But this is also, it shows you, I mean, Kabelo Gwamanda, he's obviously not fit to be the mayor, but he's obviously just a pawn in this broader game from the ANC and the EFF. If the ANC and the EFF were actually serious about trying to fix our most important city, as you said, and our biggest city and our richest city, and if Joburg fails, then South Africa will definitely fail. They've put some nobody, just to there as a figurehead who's not going to push back against any dodgy things and whatever. They haven't put somebody who can actually run a place. Thinking back to the people that you wouldn't necessarily agree with, Antti, but they had people like Parks Towers, the mayor of Joburg, who was a pretty competent person. He knew what he was doing. You could agree with, disagree with his politics. But, he was he was pretty good at his job. But now the ANC and the AFF together have put this, you know, no offense to, or actually, I hope he does get offended, a nobody in the position. And where the ANC and the AFF have been working together across the country, they've done it, done Ekurhuleni, where I was there. I can't even remember the mayor's name. I just know he's from the African Independent Congress, which is also like a one or two seat party in Ekurhuleni. They've done it in Nelson Mandela Bay as well, where they've put a mayor from a party called the Northern Alliance in power. So it just shows that the ANC and the AFF have, they got no interest in actually trying to fix anything. I mean, but I'm sure we all know that. And I'm sure most people listening to the show probably agree with us. But yeah, it's just, it's pretty depressing. You know, it's the old chestnuts, the race card, where people who are suffering from this aren't just white people. You know, it's everybody who lives in Joburg is not getting water. And doesn't matter what color you are, if you're not getting, yeah, that's, you know, it's everybody in the city is getting affected by this.
You know, as you say, Morris, Kabelo Gwamanda is not, you know, he's essentially a figurehead of this coalition. He's just there as a compromise candidate to hold the seat so the ANC and EFF don't tear each other apart. And, you know, if he was a mayor from a political party that got 50% of the vote, I would still be just as angry, but at least I'd say, well, this is someone with a kind of, there's a sort of gravitas here. He was genuinely elected by a majority of people in the city. So I guess I just have to kind of live with it. But El Jamahab, which is the party that Kabelo Gwamanda came from, got about 7,600 votes in the whole of Johannesburg out of 923,000 votes cast. So he basically represents nobody, and entirely through luck did he get into this position of political power, which he does not deserve and has demonstrated absolutely no capacity to hold whatsoever. Michael, as you can tell, I'm a bit annoyed. Do you have any wisdom and thoughts on this topic?
Well, I mean, I certainly endorse both of your points. Morris is absolutely right, and it's a very good thing to bring out, I think, is the sheer transparency of this chap's what he probably thinks of as being a kind of clinching stratagem to deflect attention and criticism and to turn it into something that it clearly isn't. I think it's failed utterly. I think Morris is absolutely right. It's transparently bad. To the extent that that the bulk of South Africans across all whatever boundaries you want to, or categories you want to divide the society into, has got to the point where it can see through all this nonsense. That's how transparent it really is. A complete part who's just mouthing these silly things, playing this silly game. It's really difficult to see even why he should bother doing it. Clearly, there is also, as Morris says, a complete lack of seriousness about confronting any of the difficulties, and this on the part of, you know, two of the country's biggest parties, the biggest and the third biggest. So this is really tells you a lot about the state we're in. I think popular resentment and disenchantment is justified and understandable. And let us hope that people are actually going to be choosing differently come May the 29th.
So exactly, you know, we've had this mayor imposed upon us in Johannesburg because these two parties, the EFF and the ANC, just basically can't agree how to divide up the pie of patronage. And quite frankly, that's their problem. It shouldn't be our problem. And they should very much suffer the shame for the complete ineptness that has been foisted upon the people of Johannesburg in this mayor. And this is not even the first time he said something completely out of touch or just quite frankly silly when there has been major crises, of which there have been several during his time as mayor, because the city has begun to deteriorate at an astonishing rate. You know, Johannesburg is, you know, you can make an argument that's maybe even, you know, never really been that well run, or that it's had little periods of functionality. But the deterioration basically in the last two or three years has been quite spectacular. Mm. Morris, any final words on this one?
Yeah, it's just very sad. I mean, I've lived almost my whole life in or around Joburg. You know, a couple of times I've been away from Joburg, but mostly, I mean, the vast majority of my life I've lived around it. And it's very sad to see. I mean, I'm not a person who hates Johannesburg. You know, I still think it's a nice place, and you know, still got nice places to go in that. And obviously the people are, sorry, Michael, nicer than Capetonians. But it's incredibly sad to see this happen. But also show, I mean, Joburg, it's obviously a very complex entity. I mean, I don't know what the latest population stats are, but I imagine it's got about between 5 and 6 million people. That's more than some countries. It's more than, I think, two or three of our provinces. You know, it's a very complex entity. It's not easy to run. And just shows you the kind of contempt that the ANC and the EFF hold for South Africans, not just in Joburg, but across the country, because they've done this tactic, as I said, in Ekurhuleni and Nelson Mandela Bay as well, where they just put some nobody in charge who, you know, probably was quite surprised he got into council in the first place and quite happy to be drawing his council salary. Now suddenly he's the mayor of a very important entity in South Africa. And he's obviously a fool, you know. I don't think anybody would disagree with me on that. And I feel a bit sorry for him. He's been thrust into a position he doesn't really deserve. And he's, you know, he would have been just a nobody, and now he's going to be remembered as, hopefully not, but he could be remembered as the guy who destroyed Joburg finally. So,
exactly. This is, you know, Johannesburg, as you say, is this enormous thing. There are anywhere between 4.8 and 8.5 million people, depending on where you count the end of Johannesburg being. I think just the municipality itself is about 4.8 million, but if you, or 5 million, but if you, if you include some of the areas around, it's bigger. And it has a huge budget. This is not something to be run by a nobody. This is a, this is an entity that requires a very skilled, competent, serious person to run. And if that, and if that person is not in charge, you're going to ruin literally millions of lives. From the poorest to the richest, you're going to mess up people's days, lives, and well-beings. Okay.
Just as a kind of complementary aspect of the thing that you both raised, the complexity and the size of Johannesburg, I think what we're also beginning to confront in instances like this and the experience that you've had in, over the past past few days is just what it's going to take to turn things around, to actually get the right people, get the right policies, get teams out on the roads fixing things. And one hopes that you don't get to be unduly expectant in the sense of, you know, wanting things to happen too quickly and then become disappointed when they don't, because I think it probably is going to be a very considerable project for millions of people to be involved in and to contribute to in whatever way, by, whether by voting or if they're members of the civil service. I think it is going to be a very huge task to overcome these problems.
Definitely. And the longer that this mayor is running the city as he has been running it up till now, the worse and the longer it's going to take to fix those problems. Okay, let's move on to our next story. And this is, I think, probably the big political story today, is that one of the most, I guess, at a time, one of the more influential ministers in the country, Pravin Gordhan, who's currently the Minister of Public Enterprises, has announced that after the 2024 elections, he will step down from cabinet and pretty much retire from politics following the elections. He says he's announcing this now so that there can be a smooth transition to whatever new minister takes over. And Pravin Gordhan is a man with a little bit of a complicated reputation. I think he's had way too much good press. He was given a lot of kudos for his time running SARS, which he ran, I think, from 1998 to 2008. He was appointed to Jacob Zuma's cabinet in 2014, where he was credited with stopping the capture of the treasury by the Guptas and the complete looting of the state by the sort of Zuma faction of the ANC. But at the same time, he also was, in many ways, the man who, sorry, it was 2009 that he was appointed financial minister, and then again in 2014. He did, however, blow out South Africa's deficit in a very big way. South Africa was rare among developing nations in that we actually had a surplus during the sort of end of the Mbeki years, which was phenomenal in terms of, in many ways, the sort of good financial discipline of 2006, 2007, 2008, that period is something that South Africa was able to live off of for many years afterwards. And of course, now as head of the Minister of Public Enterprises, we've seen many of the state-owned enterprises really go down the toilet. Eskom, of course, but we've also seen something like SAA, which has encountered huge problems. And it was Pravin Gordhan who negotiated the very secretive and still kind of being, you know, kept in the shadows deal of the Takatsu Consortium to buy 51% of SAA. So definitely, has some highlights to his career. But in my opinion, and Marius, I want to know if you agree with me, he's also, you know, done some pretty silly things in his time in government.
Yeah, look, like any human being, Pravin Gordhan is a complex person. And I don't think we can really paint him just as a villain. But as you say, when he became finance minister, if you look at the stats that we can see when he became minister, that's really when the government started spending like a teenager with their parents' credit card on their 18th birthday. You know, there was no thought given to the future and that. And I think it's obviously Pravin Gordhan's background and his ideology. He was a member of the South African Communist Party, as far as I can tell, when he was still banned. There was never any real allegations of corruption against him. He seems like a guy who did want the best for the country, but obviously he had somebody who's influenced by communist ideology and stuff, he's obviously thinks he can, there's a different way of getting to it than through free markets and restrained spending and so on. But I do think he was somebody who did care more for South Africa than for the ANC perhaps. And he did stand up, I think, against the people like Jacob Zuma and the Guptas. You know, it's one of those things, it's too ghastly to contemplate if David van Rooyen or Des van Rooyen, whatever his name was, had stayed as the Minister of Finance for longer than 4 days. It's really one of those things I'm actually getting goosebumps just thinking about it. It really makes your blood run cold. While, I mean, Gordhan did blow out the deficit, at least he did keep the keys to the Treasury somewhat, in his pocket and didn't, like, say, just open the doors and, you know, tell Jacob Zuma could be like Scrooge McDuck and just jump into South Africa's finances and swim through the money and take it and whatever. So, as I say, he's most human beings, he was complex. And I think he's a person who, I don't know if history will remember him kindly, but I think he'll probably remember him more kindly than people like Jacob Zuma. And I just see somebody in this comment saying, Ruth is a commie shill. I can promise you I'm definitely not a commie shill.
Michael, what do you make of Pravin Gordhan's time in government?
Maurice is not a communist. I think Maurice's assessment is about right. I mean, you know, no figure like him can be described as entirely a villain or entirely a hero. I feel pretty sure that he himself would have liked to have been able to leave the first, post-democracy government with a pretty good legacy. He has got a clean record on the corruption front. I think Maurice is right there. But there are very, very serious questions over his handling of public enterprises and the fact that things have been in a, you know, period of extended decline over his tenure. I often wonder about, you know, people hanging around just too long and not being as prominent dissident as the conditions so clearly require. He was able to do that with state capture, I think, to some extent. I think a lot of the society, right across partisan lines, to him with relief during some difficult years difficult episodes with Zuma and with Des van Rooyen, as Maurice has mentioned. The people desperately wanting a kind of firm hand on the keys of the Treasury, grateful that he was there to keep SARS on track. But nevertheless, I think over the past 6 years, many, many people would have preferred him to be a guy who could stand up and say, I publicly reject what is happening, and I wish state that, you know, I can clearly see these are the things that are wrong. They're not being fixed. And unless we do something about that, I don't know, he'd leave, he'd get something needs to be done. Just a more prominent act of distance. But on the other hand, politics is not really, you know, a kind of show for seeing hero worshippers. And I think it's always be a difficult thing for politicians to decide where best place to serve the public well is within the belly of the beast or trying to attack it from the outside. So I think he fell very much in that sort of parameter. It's a very difficult one, I'm sure. And he's now reached the end of his career and perhaps might well regret some decisions he's made and will have this mixed legacy.
All right, Maurice, any last thoughts on this one before we go to our final story for today?
Yeah, not really. I think that's not too much more to can say about it. But yeah, I think Gordon's got a mixed record, and I think him himself might be a bit more disappointed with his time in public service than he would have liked.
All right, let us move on to our last story. And that is that a criminal case has been opened against the mayor of Nkomazi local municipality in Mpumalanga regarding allegations of her being a beneficiary of illegally connected electricity at her home in the area. So during an interview, the mayor mentioned that at her secondary house, it was not a primary residence, which was a newly constructed area, the community had made a contribution of 40,000 rand for the installation of electricity. Now, as far as I can tell from the reporting, that area was not legally connected to the grid. And as a result, it's fairly obvious, it seems, based on the mayor's admission here, that she contributed towards the installation of an illegal electricity supply to her house. This caused a rare confluence of political actors, where both the DA and the EFF in the municipality have laid charges against her. A DA councillor, Councillor Dlamini, said that the mayor's admission signaled the level of corruption that is perpetrated by the ANC government and that this was very dishonorable behavior. I don't know, Marius, like, you'd think that if you were the mayor, one of her defenses about this, by the way, was just saying that I didn't know I would be mayor at the time when she had this done, because this was in 2021. Not the world's greatest excuse.
I think it also just shows the contempt that the ANC and many of its political appointees hold South Africans in. You know, somebody who's your public representative, they should, in theory, be beyond reproach. But we've seen that doesn't happen. And like I was saying before the show, we've seen this especially during COVID, when there were all kinds of very strict COVID regulations that South Africans had to follow. But when Andrew Mlangeni, kind of old ANC stalwart, passed away, they had his funeral. And there were none of these COVID rules that ordinary South Africans had to follow, where you could only have X amount of people at the funeral and there had to be social distancing and so on. There was these massive crowds, the same actually at the Zulu King's funeral as well. You know, none of these rules were followed. And I think you juxtapose it against what happened with Prince Philip dying in the UK. The Queen of England, Queen Elizabeth II, followed the rules exactly how they had to be followed. You could only have six people at a funeral in the UK at the time, and you had to be socially distanced and all that kind of thing. And that was what was done, because even though she's the Queen of England, she still has to follow the rules. And yeah, in South Africa, you can just actually be the mayor of some one horse town in Mpumalanga, and you don't have to follow the rules. And I think that's something also in our political culture. People need to be held more accountable. And that's actually Luthuli House that actually doesn't have to hold this woman accountable. I mean, they need to, but how the ANC needs to be held accountable is in the next election, they need to be voted out. That's the only way this kind of behavior will actually change.
Michael, any thoughts?
It is that level of shamelessness, which is so shocking in instances like this. It's what we've seen in the bigger cities and larger administrations too. What we complain about when we talk about Pim Gordhan and the larger political play that's been going on, it is this element of shamelessness. People just thinking they can get away with it, and contemptuous of the interests of ordinary South Africans. And I think is absolutely right. You know, the party will be held accountable. People will be held accountable, whoever they represent. That is a historical inevitability, I think. And it's just a pity that we have to endure these actually humiliating instances where such contempt shown so openly. I think we did comment on before with some amusement was that both the ANC, both the EFF and the NA have laid charges in this case. So, it's clearly exercising minds in Aniva in Mpumalanga. But yeah, the shocker.
No, exactly right. And this is municipalities that one right on the border of Swaziland to the south and Mozambique to the east. So, you know, it's not exactly the center of South African power and prestige. And you'd think, you know, if you were the mayor, you could probably just get them to turn a blind eye to you not paying your electricity bill. And even if you're a senior member of government, I don't understand why you have to illegally connect your house as well. I mean, presumably, you know, she was involved in the administration, even though she wasn't the mayor before. And presumably, she knows someone in the municipality who she could get to do this rather than relying on an illegal connection. Maddening. Okay. Let us, I think, close up for today by just talking a little bit about the Pledge to Vote campaign. Please check out pledgetovote.co.za and sign up there to get all the latest information on South Africa's upcoming election on the 29th of May. As I'm sure you can tell from all of these stories we've been talking about today, if you want, it's an increasingly important time to make your voice heard in South Africa's political arena. And as long as you're registered to vote, you have that opportunity to do so on the 29th of May. I think that, you know, there's an unfortunate cynicism that sometimes seeps into society, particularly in South Africa, where people give up. They say there's no hope in voting. None of the parties are different. No one represents me. But in my experience, voting is one of the most powerful tools for enacting real change all over the country, all over the world. This has always been the case, as long as people go out and use their votes and engage with the political process and make their voices heard. And so I encourage you all to go to pledgetovote.co.za and pledge to vote on the 29th of May. Okay, that is all the time we have for today. We hope that you found the show interesting. I am sweating through my face right now, so I think I'm going to go and splash some of my freshly arrived cold water on my face. And I hope you all have a wonderful weekend. Cheers, everyone.